the fly here. Whoa, this is the wrong track anyway. My bad, I'm doing this live. Why can't the kid next to me solve such a simple problem? Why can't the kids in the back be quieter when the teacher is talking? But in an elementary school environment, children are expected to be good. They are told that everyone is different, yet special. They are terrified that if they don't follow etiquette, they will be bad. And so the good kids strive to avoid being bad. But by the time they begin attending cram schools to prepare for entrance exams, the good kids secretly look down on the bad kids and make a point of avoiding them. They will enter a good junior high, followed by a respectable high school, and then a prestigious university. These people are on the fastest track, doing their best within the rules and regulations presented to them. In order to remain good in that environment, students have to do exactly as they are told, and always meet everyone's expectations. Just as they are told, they spend day after day hunched over textbooks and reference books, competing with classmates for grades. As they lead such a life, those engaged in the fierce battle of college entrance exams come to view idlers as losers. Within an environment where grades determine everything, it's only natural for high achievers to hold poor students in contempt. On the other hand, the majority of those successful students don't consider themselves especially bright. After all, it has long been the case that whenever a regular student shows even a little pride, the truly gifted in their place put them in their place. One student might be having a hard time while the kid next to him is nonchalantly entering the International Physics or International Mathematical Olympiads. It takes more than a little effort to sit shoulder to shoulder in a classroom with geniuses, for whom comprehending all the material is a given. Despite the warped perspective, they have a strong enough grasp on reality to diligently pursue their studies. Whether they like it or not, all college-bound students know the truth. If they want an income comparable to what their parents possess, they have to attend a good university and get a decent job, at least. This group is driven by a strong, yet youthful desire to succeed. But along with that desire comes a fatal fear of failure. As such, they have no choice but to chain themselves to their desks. After struggling in that harsh world, the best students pass the entrance exam for universities worthy of being called prestigious. Then the game changes. Many are forced to realize that they have entered a world where people can no longer be evaluated by grades, but instead the question, what have you achieved? Those who can adapt to the sudden paradigm shift and new environment do. Obey the rules, search for loopholes, sneer at the guidelines despite being bound by them. In the end, everyone learns that rules are necessary to make the system run smoothly. Freedom without laws means anarchy. Laws without freedom means tyranny. So much as they hate restrictions, they fear unlimited freedom. He failed to understand people who came late to class. He couldn't see the value of people who drank themselves to oblivion. He couldn't comprehend the sporty types who droned on about the power of the human spirit. But when he encountered the Chicago School and saw how these works applied rationally to the relationship between rules and freedom, he was ecstatic. After all, it meant that he could stay on track as long as he played by the rules. He managed to exude the appearance of a diligent university student while hiding the fact that he was a nerd. In essence, that's what it means to be free, within the confines of the rules. As far as his friends were concerned, he enjoyed hanging around with his high school buddies as well as a bunch of kindred spirits he met in college. This was his moratorium until he went out into the world, although he still made sure to improve himself and develop connections. Naturally, he invested in his human capital by acquiring language skills and culture to a point. Thus, his educational background, according to the theory of signaling, would project society's ideal of a good college student. Unsurprisingly, what people like him needed wasn't actually talent. The most important thing was looking good on paper. In other words, recruiters preferred someone who passed the company's exam with flying colors, came from a prestigious school, and was a familiar face to the interviewers. It was for precisely that reason that the headwind of the recession's employment slump didn't really blow against him. After all, he was on his mark at a different starting line compared to everyone else. In truth, he had the advantage. This contest was completely rigged from the start. From the get-go, it was only natural to visit alumni who came from the same alma mater.